Today on Seculo, President Biden demands the Democrat mayor play down the border crisis happening in his own city, trying to pay him off with federal funds. We'll talk about that more today on Seculo.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Look, the city of El Paso has been absolutely overrun with migrant arrivals in recent weeks. And as you just mentioned, the Post is reporting the White House has privately pressured El Paso's Democrat mayor to not declare an emergency there.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
The Democrat mayor of El Paso, Oscar Leeser, gave his own statement to the New York Post, writing in part, quote, "I don't bow to pressure from any side. I make decisions based on current circumstances and in the best interest of the citizens of El Paso."
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We're taking your phone calls too on this at 1-800-684-3110, because you imagine then how many other cities who are dealing with the migrant crisis, like El Paso, these border cities, have gotten the same message from the White House, which is don't declare a state of emergency, even though that's what the Democrat mayor wanted to do initially and was being pushed by city council members to do so. But we'll send you FEMA funds. But just to give you an example of how much money it's costing these cities to deal with the illegal immigration and the crisis at the border, for just El Paso, just for their emergency funds that they're supposed to get reimbursed from the federal government, they have only gotten $2 million out of the $8 million they've already spent. So these cities are relying a lot on Biden administration promises that ultimately you will get these checks written so that you'll be able to replenish your city's funds. Now, also at the same time, El Paso, this is a Democrat mayor, again, who there's all been all this criticism about the buses, you know, going to New York, going to Chicago, going to all these cities. And he's and Eric Adams, the mayor of New York City, came out attacking the city of El Paso, saying, "We didn't ask El Paso to do this." Now, this is the guy who ran as, "We're the city for everybody. We're the place to come for everybody. We're the sanctuary. This is the Statue of Liberty city." Okay, well, if you really are, then you should be able to take 17 to 25,000 immigrants into your community pretty easily into a city that size. But it's causing trouble there. And what the mayor said in El Paso, Dad, was he said, "Listen, we're not forcing anybody to go there. When we have these people, we've done, I think they've done a number of 196 buses for a total of 9,300 people, and they've asked. So 7,300 wanted to go to New York. So they let them go to New York, and they paid their way to New York. About 2,000 went to Chicago because that's where they wanted to go." So it's not surprising that this is where they have contacts.
So the White House has asked specifically El Paso to not declare a state of emergency. And as Jordan said, they will give them money to offset this, but they don't want that declaration of an emergency. Now, as Jordan said, the Democratic mayor of El Paso knows they've got an emergency situation there. And the transfer of people out of El Paso to New York is based on, as you said, their decision, the decision of the people that came into the United States illegally. That's where they wanted to go. Maybe family ties, whatever it might be. But here's what's the irony of all of this, and I think the danger of all of this is, this is now not a Republican versus Democrat issue. This is cities being overrun and not being able to handle the volume of people involved in this. That is the real problem here. So when you have that happening, you've got to say to yourself, what can the city do? And that's what they decided to do. But the president said, "Hey, don't declare a state of emergency." And why do you think he decided not to declare a state of emergency? Could it be because, boy, that's not going to look very good?
Yeah, so they're using FEMA funds. There's some work around here that they're being able to utilize, where they're utilizing FEMA, so the Federal Emergency Management funds, to these cities, but they're able to do it by saying cities don't declare states of emergency. We don't want to have to declare a state of emergency. I mean, could you imagine if Joe Biden today, a few weeks after the election, less than 3 weeks now, people are already voting in many states. So, I mean, really, Election Day begins now because of early voting. And if they had to declare, if they declared a state of emergency on the southern border, it would kill Democrat chances of even of holding the Senate. So they're playing games with your taxpayer dollars, but even going after Democrats, that's how far they will go to try and play this game that there is not actually an emergency, there's not actually a crisis at our southern border. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Too Seculo, and we're taking phone calls too on this 1-800-684-3110. Are you in these communities, these towns, these cities? Are you feeling the impact of the illegal immigration? One is, of course, the numbers of people, so the resources it takes from communities which just don't have the size, don't have the numbers, don't have the people to do it. The second is we have a federal government that doesn't want to acknowledge the problem. So they're telling cities and states, don't declare a state of emergency, but we'll send you emergency funds.
Yeah, but this is...
And to me, it's just, again, the humanitarian disaster here is gigantic. The fact that yesterday, remember we reported that DOD, they got the call to say, hey, if you want to go for 60 days, volunteer. This is also a workaround. It's gone out to every federal agency now. So you could be a Department of Justice attorney and take 60 days to go clean up trash at the border. To me... And you're not getting paid more, because that would be a different declaration, like if they needed to send special people down. But of course, this is, again, they don't want to have to actually acknowledge how bad it is. So they're trying to use all these workarounds that won't make them have to declare emergencies and use the emergency title, because that's what we've all been saying it is. It's a crisis. It's an emergency. It should be declared that way. It's really the biggest threat we face directly as a country right now. We've come out of COVID, so now you'd think this, with the drugs that are coming across, with the human trafficking coming across, this is the crime, this is the problem plaguing our country, one of the major problems other than the economy, and it has a direct effect on the economy. I mean, these cities and towns are saying, we can't afford this.
Look, here's what it is. The cities received $2 million from the federal government. Okay, so that's what they've got. The reality is they've already spent... over 8 million. And you know that's underreporting because these things run months in arrears. So you've got an economic crisis that's facing the city. And then you've got a mayor who wants to declare an emergency. The city council, at least three members of the city council, said declare the national emergency. That will help get additional funds in. But the reality is, if you look at what's happened, is this becomes a political statement. But then, as you said, and listen to this from Fox News, I think this statement sums it up. Take a listen.
Our Homeland Security sources now are accusing the White House of, quote, circumventing an emergency declaration at the southern border by borrowing labor from across the federal government instead of asking Congress for additional funds to stem the border crisis.
So the mayor is getting these additional funds. She said, I don't bow to pressure from any side and make decisions based on current circumstances and in the best interest of the citizens of El Paso. Wouldn't the best interest of the citizens of El Paso right now be get funds there, get money there so they can address this?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole issue. And so, again, we take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Barbara in Utah on line one. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just have a comment to make, and this is the way I see the world. If they're going to spend all this money and they're not really doing anything, they ought to come down to the border, live there for a week with the migrants, and then make decisions.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Barbara, and I want to ask you a question, too, on politics. And we're starting to do this more and more when people call in from states that are in the news. One, they won't go. The vice president, the president, they're certainly not going to go these next few weeks.
It's bad imagery.
Bad imagery. Looks like they've allowed a problem to go from one that was being handled, wasn't perfect, but it was being handled by the Trump administration. There were solutions being done, to just totally out of control. So they're not going to show that imagery. But Barbara, if you're still with us, I wanted to ask you about the election, because a lot of news on the Senate race in Utah. Our good friend Mike Lee say that there was a poll came out that showed Evan McMullen was running as an independent, but he's really a Democrat, is very close. What are you picking up from your friends and family about that?
McMullen is basically a chameleon. He changes his statements to suit whatever he thinks the people want to hear. And he is nothing but a liar. And
so you think end of the day, ultimately, I mean, I think Mike Lee will ultimately...
It's hard to believe that's even a close race.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you want to sound the alarm because people are starting to vote to make sure if, he needs some resources, he needs to start doing some work. And Mitt Romney's been a real problem there, because he is the only U.S. senator, Republican senator, that hasn't endorsed Mike Lee. And his excuse is, I'm friends with both of them. But the balance of power... Whether Mitt Romney is on a committee, whether he's on...
Unbelievable,
it kind of shows, I think he's
a heck of a risk.
Seems like he's kind of done.
I think so. I mean, like, I think, listen, we've known him a long time, and
he's taking this turn that's made him very isolated.
Yeah, but this is bad politics. I mean,
it doesn't make sense if you're a Republican, which he is.
You got a House and Senate that are, I mean, I think the House clearly looks like it's going to be the Republicans. Yep. The Senate, folks, anybody that's saying, hey, I've seen these headlines, hey, it's going to be, you know, the momentum is now here. The Republicans have the momentum. 2 weeks ago, it was Democrats have the momentum. It's going to come down to 3 or 4 states. And probably comes down to Pennsylvania and Georgia. And right now in Pennsylvania and Georgia, it's too close to call on the Senate side, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can't start predicting. First of all, things can happen. People are already voting. There's always a group. Polling is tougher now than before. Trend polling is one thing, showing rates tight, showing, you know, people with blowouts. But when you start getting to tell you the 3-4 points,
yeah,
that's anybody. Anybody can win at that point. Unless you're at like 9-10. I think I'd say these days, unless you're in that like double digit kind of poll where you can really see a trend, the pollsters are really figuring that out, every race could go either way. So you can't take any of these for granted. Turnout is key.
And how does this, like the story we're talking about with El Paso, well, because immigration is now, the border insecurity is affecting every state. How do you think that's going to play out in the election when you see the thing like, don't declare a state of emergency? That's not, and why is that the reason? It's a lousy optic.
Yeah. Yes, they don't want to declare a state of emergency, but now they're having the Democrats, because you got this mayor got pulled out on this because of Eric Adams, the mayor of New York. So the mayor in El Paso had to respond to the Democrat. The two Democrat mayors are going after each other, and the Biden administration sitting in the middle and really not doing anything, handing out some resources. But as I said, of the $8 million already spent by El Paso over the funds they have available, they've only been reimbursed $2 million. Now, that's small numbers for the federal government, but it just shows you they got sold this game of, we'll use the federal emergency funds, but don't declare a state of emergency. And by the way, I don't like that these mayors are getting pushed around, but they also are trying to get the funding. So what this mayor said is, I had to make the decision that was best for the city. When the Biden administration came in and said, don't do this, we'll give you this many resources, he's saying, I chose the resources.
But you've got the Department of Justice, DOD, all these agencies, DHS, others, saying, get your volunteers down here. We're going to pay you everything. Listen to what Congressman Mike Waltz has said. He's been on this broadcast before. Take a listen.
I will be certainly looking into what these DOD officials that are apparently going to our border on a volunteer basis aren't focused on back in the Pentagon. The opportunity cost of this action, rather than just coming to Congress and dealing with an above board way, is really concerning to me.
This is the problem. I mean, and it's, who doesn't think that this is not a national emergency? Is there anybody on any political party that doesn't think this is, you know, this is a national emergency? We don't have control of the border, and the migration crisis is real, and it's going to get worse in the months ahead.
Here's what makes me nervous, though. And by the way, I want to say this because I've followed, Rumble just started doing push notifications. So if you are subscribed to the ACLJ Rumble page, make sure your notifications are now turned on. So go in there. You're already a subscriber. If you're not, subscribe if that's how you watch the broadcast and interact. And make sure you've turned on notifications so you'll get the push notification when we're live on Seculo. But I'm seeing a lot of people in the chat still saying, I think they're going to cheat. I think they're going to, you know, and I think this is the problem. If you go in with that mindset, you can't win if you don't vote. So you've got to stop that messaging. The messaging should be, let's overwhelm the system. Let's have so many Republicans and conservatives and independents show up to vote Republican that there's no way to cheat. That it was that, you know, big of a victory. And because when you start telling people it's a waste of time, I will tell you, I voted the primary, which would usually take 5 minutes here, took 45 minutes this year. So I'm definitely going to vote early.
What do you think that's going to mean?
I think because I live in a swing district that's newly redrawn, and the Democrats got a little bit of a push behind them because of the abortion issue.
Right.
So, like I was telling our team, I have never seen in a state like we live in, which is a very red state statewide, pro-abortion signs in people's yards for elections. So it's like vote for choice, and here's the candidates to vote for. So they saw this surge, and so you saw had people showed up in primaries that never would have voted before. So I think, again, you could do poll watching, do what's right. Make sure if you can volunteer to do that, that is wonderful. That is great. But you got to get out the vote. I will tell all of you who say they're going to cheat, they're going to steal, you're the reason why we lose. You're suppressing our own vote. Don't buy in. They love you doing this. You understand that. They love you saying they're going to cheat, they're going to steal it at 3 a.m. This is exactly what they want, because guess what? Your neighbor is not going to stand in line 3 hours to vote if that's the case. If you convince them that their vote's a waste of time.
No, you're 100%
correct. Because this is going to be one where if you don't vote early, there's going to be long lines.
I want to encourage you also, if you're not getting and downloading the Secular Brothers podcast, you need to do it. Logan and Jordan do it. They do a great job. It's funny. It's serious. It's content that's news analysis, but it's got a lighthearted edge to it. You can get it wherever you get your podcast. I encourage you to subscribe to that today. And also support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. And we didn't even talk a lot about fundraising this month. But again, your support of the ACLJ makes all of this possible, including coming to you 5 days a week with news analysis, with a full team to give you analysts. We'll be joined by some of those coming after the break, and our legal work around the world. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
Welcome back to Secular. We're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And again, we talked about the issue in El Paso, the immigration issue. We would update you on some ACLJ victories as well on life and ACLJ work, what's going on too. And of course, you can always do that at ACLJ.org. We know with this busy time, you know, 20 days out from the election day, people are already voting in many states across the country or sitting in their ballots for those states that have that mail-in ballot system. And we're going to keep updating you. That's going to be a dominant story, but we do want to make sure you know what we're doing at the ACLJ.
So, you know, it's interesting because the abortion issue, which is playing as a big issue because of the Dobbs decision, and it activated some on the left of center that said, you know, that we've got to do this. Joe Biden has said that the president has said if the Democrats retain the House of Representatives, the first thing they're going to do is try to codify Roe versus Wade. So you've got the political momentum there. I'm going to get into some of the specifics of what we're doing, but I think for a moment it's important to understand that the political aspect of this, you have two very distinct worldviews on the issue of life, Cece.
Yeah, and you're seeing that play out in the political world, absolutely. You see pro-lifers, which tend to be conservative and Republican, standing for life and you know, battling to protect the life of unborn babies. And then you see the Biden administration at every single turn, whether it's at the VA or with his just statements of, if we, you know, take over Congress, we will codify Roe. He is constantly making pro-abortion statements and trying to take over and federalize the abortion issue, take it back from the states.
And they've done some federalizing, Jordan, of the abortion issue because of what the administration has put forward on the Veterans Administration.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about that with the VA already attempting to, again, turn those VAs into abortion clinics. The VA secretary was announcing, hey, we, you know, like, they're proud of doing our, we did an abortion. Didn't get into details about whether or not it was one that would have already been okay under their system, like if it was a life decision that had to be made. We know that their entire goal is to somehow circumvent what the Supreme Court has done and still turn federal facilities into abortion clinics.
So we've got a letter that we have sent off to the VA talking about, it's our comments section for this interim rule under what they're calling reproductive health care. This letter went out yesterday. Cece, let's talk about what we're asserting in this letter.
Yeah, so we did public comments. We submitted public comments. And what the Biden administration did through the VA, they circumvented not only what the Supreme Court had said in Dobbs, but they actually, they circumvented the Administrative Procedures Act by doing this interim rule and not letting a public comment period go on before they actually enforce the rule. But they also circumvented an actual law on the books that says that the VA cannot perform abortions. But yet the Biden administration went around that, went around the Procedures Act, and put this interim rule in, which we are now submitting public comments after the fact.
What are we saying in our
We point out that it not only violates the Administrative Procedures Act, but also that it violates a rule on the books that disallows the VA from performing abortions.
We also, through ACLJ Action, over 11,000 ACLJ Action members and supporters, they filed their own comment using our tool. So we were able to do the ACLJ comment with 137,000 ACLJ supporters. And then through ACLJ Action, we're able to give you the tool, which we have in place there at ACLJAction.org, and 11,000 plus of you actually sit your own comment in. So this dual effort that we're seeing again, and they have to respond to each one.
Yeah, and that's on the federal level. So that's how we're handling it on the federal level, where they made this move with the VA. Now, there's also this move in states, and we've seen this language start coming up, this perinatal language, and that's very damaging because that is post-birth. And we're trying to get to the bottom of how in the world did they decide, the pro-abortion groups decide, that that was going to be their marker. That's where they were going to come in and say, hey, this is where we're going to do this. We're not going to bend on this. We're going to defend the word perinatal. We've got three different demands going out under what are called the Open Records Act in California.
Yeah, so we've been filing that perinatal bill, and now it is a law because Governor Newsom signed it into law. And I'll just remind everyone that that is the law in California that says a person cannot be subject to criminal liability for perinatal death, which means death after the baby is born. Now, we absolutely, you know, objected to that language. They did make an amendment after our very loud objection, and they added due to causes that occurred in utero. But what's so important about that is that same law does not allow a coroner to investigate death. So basically, if a baby dies about 28 days after their death, there is no criminal liability for that. So we sent a legislative
and
open records
act. To be clear, that was, I think, Cece, to protect the abortionist.
Oh, absolutely. Because we know that they let babies be born alive, and babies are born alive during an abortion. And these abortionists can absolutely let that baby die on the table. They don't have to do anything to protect that life.
So, Jordan, in the we're 3 weeks out. I mean, not even from, well, I guess 3 weeks exactly, from a midterm election that's going to be very significant. How big of an issue is this playing?
The Democrats want it to be the only issue. So Joe Biden today is going to announce he's going to say if Democrats win seats in the House and the Senate, they're going to put forward this federal legislation to codify Roe. We've seen this a number of times being announced by Biden. But again, he's going to try and make this the number one issue. It was a very trending top issue 6 weeks ago.
How about now?
It's not. And that's inflation and the economy.
Which
people can't pay their bills.
Now,
I still think that there could be, in these very close races, a group of people, obviously that's why Biden is doing this and the Democrats are pushing this, who could be motivated by the issue in a way against Republicans. And so when you have a very close race of 2 or 3 points, and we've been doing some polling at ACLJ Action on some of these life initiatives.
Close.
They're upside down, even in conservative Republican states.
People don't like the way they're worded.
They don't understand. It's changing constitution.
We worked on a number of those states.
Yes, and it just has just the education, and the other side has dumped millions and millions. So in a lot of states, I think you'll see Republican victories and potentially losses on making sure you're not going to find a right to abortion in your state constitution.
And the problem is, this is where Planned Parenthood and these groups have unbelievable, unlimited resources, CC.
They spend money on.
And this is what they do.
Yeah, and they've been planning for that since Dobbs, before Dobbs,
yes.
Because we saw that got leaked. So, they have been planning this. You confuse the issues, especially on ballot initiatives. The language is so confused that you don't know whether to vote yes or no based on that language. And so people need to be very educated when they go to the polls if there's an issue like that on your ballot. And, people that are pro-life need to not think that Dobbs was the end to this battle. They need to get out. They need to vote. And, it's going to be seen in November, this election. Abortion is an issue. It's not the top issue, but it's definitely
we are right around the corner from that. So CNN has an article out yesterday that says focus on abortion rights may not be enough to save Democrats in face of economic concerns. So in other words, are the economic concerns now, Jordan, outweighing the abortion interests?
I think so. I mean, people, these are issues where people got to think about, affording gas, food, planning also now, because we're being told, and we'll talk about this when we come back. Second half hour of the broadcast, the strategic oil reserves being used and all of that to keep the price down. Well, if that's the case, then what is the price going to be? So people are very concerned about what the economy looks like post-election, where the Democrats have used everything possible to try and artificially keep prices down to some extent. We want you to enjoy the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110 to give us a call. Be right back. Second half hour coming up.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get into the oil issue, the gas energy, because the White House is going to tap back into the strategic reserve yet again, depleting that reserve for political purposes, which is an issue we talked a lot about with Mike Pompeo and Rick Grenell, that's not why it's there. It's there for if we're in war, if we're cut off, if we've got, you know, serious issues. Instead, they're using it to keep prices down to some extent, though it's not really working. And we'll get into some international issues, too, with Iran and Russia and that alliance that has been building between those two countries. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-684-3110. I want to start with Gwen in Georgia. That's a big battleground state this year. And Gwen, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Gwen, you with us?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I just wanted to tell you I'm here in Georgia, and I just wanted to tell you that I will be voting. And I know there was irregularities in the 2020 election and everything, but I think it's just strengthened the law here in Georgia and all over the United States.
This goes to what Jordan
said. Yeah, a lot
earlier.
Of states did that.
Yeah. Yes.
They said, let's clarify our laws. We're not going to do this crazy COVID stuff again if that happened, where, you know, we're going to start mailing out ballots. I'm not telling this group of folks who was mad about the last election cycle that they're all wrong, because there was crazy stuff. I had 3 ballots sent to my house that got to me various ways because I, you know, moved around the country and those hadn't been taken off yet. 3 live ballots, not requests.
Live.
But live ballots. So I get it, but we shouldn't see that at that level. This is not a general election.
Nope.
States like Georgia put in new laws in place so that you wouldn't have these moves made by remember, we're having, like, each county was changing rules as we went. So you have to have rules of the game. I get that. We have that this election cycle. The rules are there. They're in place. These states went through a lot of criticism.
Yep.
A lot of name calling in these states. They lost, you know, the All-Star game in Georgia over making sure there is election integrity. So if your state was willing to go to bat for you, lose major business and economics for your state, don't then tell me you're not going to vote or if your vote won't matter. Because
right.
they went to bat for you. So if you're in a state that then said, let's make it better, let's make it clear, like Georgia did, then I think you got to say, your job is to turn out the vote. It's a turnout election. They're all close.
100%. Let's take Kathy's call coming in online too. Kathy, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about what the word on the street in these Latin American countries is, that these people are just packing up and moving up here. When I see people getting off the buses, they look fine. And I know we're a little naive in this country. But I'm just thinking, I live 80 miles from the South Dakota border in Minnesota. I would like to go to South Dakota and get out of this political environment in Minnesota. I can't even do that because it involves too much. How are these people even thinking that this is the best thing to do?
Well, I mean, the U.S. has an incredible welfare program, all these different programs in place to help people in need. So if you're leaving a country that has a horrible economy or is very dangerous, or maybe you are, most of them are economic motivated, which is why their asylum claims will not should not succeed, because that is not a valid reason to claim asylum. Asylum is very specific. It's like if the cartel is coming after you specifically to kill you and or your family. You've got to really be able to prove that with evidence. But these economic illegal immigrants are just saying, you know what, it's better to be an illegal immigrant inside the United States than a legal citizen of my country. That's it. No. I mean, that's the basics.
Yeah, this is it's a serious...
Even when it's tough here, it's still a lot better here than it is there.
Well, that's exactly right. So we're not saying that the people that are coming here are leaving a great situation. They're not. And the problem is we have a porous border. We don't have controls. It's taxing our cities. Look what's happened in El Paso. I mean, a Democratic mayor has put people on buses, sent them to New York because that's where the people wanted to go. And then, you know, the mayor of New York says, what are you doing? This is a Democratic mayor to a Democratic mayor. So I'll tell you what they're doing. They can't handle it. They've gotten $2 million of federal aid. They've already spent $8 million. This is a lot for a local city to handle. And then when they want to declare a national emergency, the Biden administration comes and said, well, don't do that. It's going to look bad. Yeah. So that's what you're dealing with.
All right, folks, give us a call. We want to stay updated. 1-800-684-3110. Go to aclj.org. We'll be right back. Secular. We're talking a little bit about gas prices, which is affecting everybody right now. And of course, the planning too. You know, we're a lot of people predicting that the reason why the price is even where it is now is because of moves like the White House is about to announce yet again, which is they're going to announce another 10 to 15 million barrels from our strategic reserve to flood the market to try and keep this price high, but to try and keep it, you know, below the highest number it got to with inflation. But then, you know, post-election day, what do you think is going to happen? They're not going to be as concerned on the politics of it. They're not going to be able to keep going to the reserve. They are, again, they're using the strategic reserve as a political tool, as an economic tool, which it's not supposed to be used for. It's not supposed to be used for keep your gallon of gas low. It's your real national emergency crisis war, and you're cut off, and this is what you've got to use at a point where you're not caring about the price. This is now being used as a tool to keep prices down, which is not why it exists in the first place.
But it's fair to say that we do have an energy crisis.
Yep.
And it's going to be a significant energy crisis. And before we went on air, when we were in our pre-meeting, Professor Harry Hutchinson was talking about the impact that this could have on the northeastern portion of the United States, the lack of energy and the concerns over this. And Harry, this is a real problem, a real threat.
Absolutely. And the problems are compounded by virtue of the desperation of the Biden administration and their inability to think coherently about energy policy. So the desperation which characterizes the Biden administration pushes them to double down on expensive, unreliable, and unstable sources of energy. They are looking to transition, if you will, to the so-called green energy future. And so now President Biden has tapped into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but that is a drop in the bucket. So 10 to 15 million barrels of petroleum, that could be consequential if we're talking about New York City or California. But it's inconsequential if you're talking about worldwide production. Why? Because OPEC is cutting production by 2 million barrels per day. So tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve basically offsets what OPEC has done for 5 or 6 days. That's it.
So this idea we're going into the reserves when it solves a five-day issue, there's just nothing. The Saudis, though, said when the president went and said we want more production, the Saudis said no. What was the significance there?
Well, I think it's a signal that the United States has lost influence in the Middle East. And now the Saudis are doing something that America should do. They are putting their own interests first. President Biden continues to push for the interest of the rest of the world at the expense of the American people. European leaders are doing precisely the same thing, and now the European people are beginning to revolt. And so you have huge demonstrations in Prague, in Paris, in Berlin, and in the United Kingdom, where electricity prices are scheduled to rise by 300 to 400%. Some families are seeing their gas bills go up from around, let's say, $300 a month to $1,500 a month. Now, the British government, of course, is going to intervene because it doesn't want to accept the political consequences. But the consequences are coming, and they're coming to New England. New England will face, according to energy producers, blackouts during the dead of winter. Why? Because the United States has given up our energy independence, number one. Number two, we are sending liquefied natural gas to Europe when that liquefied natural gas should be sent to New England. So there are huge problems on the horizon.
Are we going to see a situation where New England could literally have no available fuel or significant blackouts and brownouts in the winter?
Absolutely. The petroleum or energy suppliers in Europe are absolutely warning this, warning the people, and they are sending out signals. They're clear signals. But guess what? Winter will hit the hardest after Election Day.
So, of course, you want to change the debate. If you're on the Democratic side of this, you want to change the debate to abortion, because you sure don't want to be talking about power outages in the winter.
That's the stretch that it is. It's that it can be an important issue to folks. It's a very important issue to our supporters. As life, it's probably the number one issue for a lot of our supporters on how they decide who they're going to vote for and decisions they'll make politically. Flip that around. They're trying to do that on the other side and say, make this your priority. Ignore the war in Ukraine. Ignore China. Ignore the gas prices, inflation. Ignore your house price. Maybe, you know, ignore the fact that you've lost 25% of your 401k savings. 25% is the estimate. So at that time, again, when you put abortion next to you've lost a quarter of your life savings, guess what likely is going to win out? And guess what's going to likely motivate people more? Economics. And guess who people, voters trust a lot better, more on the economy and business and when it comes to inflation and dealing with these issues? Republicans. So it should be a wave election. Now, we're a hyper-partisan country. So the difference between winning and losing is a few points. And it's interesting, like where some of the models still show the Democrats holding on to the Senate. Real Clear Politics is now showing Republicans picking up to 52, and that's not including Arizona. Mm. So, I mean, you know, it is there for the taking for whoever does a better job these final 3 weeks.
Of getting
weeks.
The people out to vote. Let me ask you.
At this point, it's getting out the vote.
It is getting out the vote. So let me ask you this, Harry. You talked about the kind of the inept and attitude or process that the Biden administration is dealing with on energy. There's a report that the Biden administration keeps delaying oil and gas permitting due to a mathematical error that they could have corrected months ago and still haven't done.
Yes.
Which is hard to believe, okay?
Well, yes and no. It raises a particular question. Was the error intentional or was it unintentional? And I lean to the side of believing that it was a deliberate error. Why? Because it's another excuse for delaying fossil fuel production in the United States. Keep in mind, that's virtually the Biden administration's number one goal. And so, essentially, they're saying to the American people, let the American people suffer. But let's soften the suffering before Election Day. And I think if you look at the Inflation Reduction Act, it was all about green energy. It was all about this transition to expensive and unreliable energy. That is their new religion. That is the religion of the left.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? You put that issue, like we said, the abortion issue. We got a call coming in from Teresa that I'd like to answer, because all of this is a lot of this is kind of hide the ball, move the goalpost, so to speak. But let's go ahead and take Teresa's call.
Hey, Teresa, welcome to Secular. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, if they're turning the VAs into abortion centers, how does that affect the care of our veterans? I have family members and friends that cannot get
good care. I know.
They're waiting a long time for eye appointments, surgeries.
Yeah, general care of the VA. How does it affect it? Let me put this. It's an overtaxed system to begin with. The VA has had a whole series of issues.
And then you put abortion politics inside the Veterans Administration hospitals, and you ask yourself, is this the new priority? Because it sure seems that way. I mean, they're bragging about this.
I think that is correct. So essentially, the Biden administration has deprioritized health care for veterans. Remember, essentially, we've made a commitment to veterans to take care of them. And why are they doing this? Because for the Biden administration, it's politics all of the time. And at the end of the day, they don't really care, this is my opinion, of course, about veterans. They care essentially about satisfying their masters at Planned Parenthood.
All right, folks, we're going to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110, whether it's on the oil issue, whether it's on the energy issue, whether it is on the politics, races in your state, election issues. We want to take those calls. We have 20 days out. We want to talk to you directly. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. It's all about turnout. They will always wait to those folks who, the election day voters, who haven't made up their mind. They will still try to work for those, both sides. And you're seeing from the Biden administration today an announcement on abortion, an announcement on oil.
Yeah.
So there's the two issues right there.
Yeah, I mean, this is for real, and we are getting within the real zone here. Folks, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We encourage you to do that, aclj.org. Also, Jordan Logan do another podcast today, secularbrothers.com, and you can figure out all the places you can hear or listen to or watch the podcast, Spotify, wherever you get them. We encourage you to do it. It'll be on Facebook and Rumble, and I know Rumble is... been a big source of increase in viewership for us across the board. So we encourage you to do that, secularbrothers.com. And again, support the ongoing work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We're going to get into a little bit of what's happening with Russia and Ukraine as well, and your phone calls at 800-684-3110.
Here we'll take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You can still be part of the show today. Let's go to Edward in Ohio on line three. Now, Edward, before you get to your call, let me ask you about the race in Ohio because we're getting callers from states that are around the country that have the most attention. So if you had to make a call right now, J.D. Vance, Tim Ryan, take your partisan politics out of it, who do you think wins if the election were held today?
I hope it's going to be Vance.
Well, I get that. Yeah, it's very close there. I mean, I think some polls showed him two down, so two up. There was another debate last night. I think he's done very good in those debates. But go ahead, Edward.
I just wanted to make a comment. I just got fuel oil yesterday. 100 gallons was already at $4.99 a gallon. I just spent almost $530 for only 100 gallons. Mm. That's not even close to what I'm going to need for the winter, and look at the price.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately the price is not going to get better, but this is the reality. I mean, we've gone from a country that was energy independent, the strongest military in the world, a stock market that was roaring, an economy that was roaring, and in 19 months, we've gone from that to a major conflict in Eastern Europe that could turn into a world war if we're not very careful, and I don't think the administration is being very careful. Energy costs that are affecting everybody. There's no one not affected by this. Every business is affected by this. And this is the reality of it. Then you find out that the administration wants to cut a deal with Iran, back in the nuclear deal, and then Colonel Wes Smith is with us, and the drones that are now the Russians are using to attack civilians in Ukraine, guess where they're coming from? Iran.
Yeah, Russia is now purchasing weapons from our declared enemy, and it's crazy. The stakes for the United States and Europe have suddenly been raised even further by Russia's use of Iranian drones. It indicates that Putin is nowhere near calling this war off, of backing away from Ukraine. It has the potential to really escalate out of control. Ukraine is not going to give up. And they've indicated they're not going to surrender any of their territory, including Crimea. So Putin is upping his game. If these Iranian drones, which are attacking civilian targets as well as infrastructure, if they don't give Putin his desired result, the question becomes, what does he do next? Does he use chemical weapons? Does he resort to using tactical nuclear weapons? And then the larger question is, if he does that, what is the response of NATO and the United States? This is escalating, and it has the potential, Jay, to really escalate beyond our control.
And Jordan, you said we're 20 days out from an election. So you got all of this unrest going on globally. How does that play into the election right now? Or is it still too remote?
No, I think that what you'll have is different world actors doing things to influence the election, or trying to. So whether it's the Russians trying to escalate, or the Chinese president, again, we saw the move by the Saudis. Yep. I think the Saudis were trying to deliver, it wasn't so much an anti-American move, it was an anti-Biden move. Now it's hurting Americans, but what they're saying is, we don't want to deal with this administration. He went over there, had the meeting. Obviously, that didn't work out very well. He said really bad things about them. Trump administration had a really good relationship with them. They've done a lot of kind of, they're starting to modernize some. They're not perfect. They're far from perfect, but they're a strong ally. And yet, they decided to deliver a blow. Now, you can say the same thing with the Chinese in the last election cycle with Trump with COVID. And so those things, I mean, so it's happening on both sides.
Yeah,
I don't think, again, the more we're involved in Ukraine, and you see now Russia partnering with Iran, this is, again, with these drones, the fact that Iran has decided to take these steps when they're still trying to get into a discussion, this administration is still trying to get a nuclear deal with them.
I know.
But instead of just saying, like the Russians, they're the enemy, they won't classify them as such. So they're playing two sides with Iran.
Yeah, this is what's so bizarre. So, Wes, we've got a situation where China's saber-rattling again with Taiwan. Russia has already gone into Ukraine. You got Czechoslovakia is very worried about where all this will go because of energy issues for them.
Right.
So you've got energy being used as a weapon.
Oh, that's the alarming thing about this, Jay. This escalation of the war in Ukraine, and there's no other way to put it, this is a real escalation of the war. It's coming at the beginning of winter. Just yesterday, President Zelensky of Ukraine announced that because of these renewed Russian attacks, that 30% of the power plants in Ukraine have now been destroyed. So at the beginning of winter.
30% of the power plants have been destroyed in Ukraine in a week, they said, in the last week.
Yes.
What's the line where the destruction of the power, so that means, you know, ability to keep things warm because it's getting cold there already, what happens?
That's the unknown, you know, answer to that question, Jay, because, you know, does Ukraine at some point surrender and throw in the towel, or does NATO and the U.S. bolster their involvement in the war so that it becomes essentially World War III? I mean, I'll give you another example of how this war could widen. Because Iran is now selling these drones to Russia to use in Ukraine, Israel thus far has not come out on either side in this war.
Yep.
But now an Israeli cabinet member just yesterday said because Iran is now involved that Israel should get involved. And now Ukraine is requesting an air defense system from Israel. Mm. So again, this has the potential not just to be a European war, but to be a Middle East war. And we are in the middle of it. And
could we get sucked into World War III here?
Absolutely.
I mean, of the scale of where you've got to mobilize?
I pray not. But when you go into a situation like this, there are so many unknowns, and we might know what our intentions are, but the enemy gets a vote too.
Yeah. This is the, so to me, Jordan, when you look at it and with 20 days out to an election, that's going to determine the fate of the House and the Senate and governorships all over. But let's talk about the federal level, the House and the Senate. You say to yourself, we got Colonel Smith here saying we could be on the verge, and others have said it too, it's not a shock, that we could be on the verge of a world war. And at the same time, you got an economic collapse, an energy crisis, and then the left is running on, you know, let's get abortion rights protected.
Yeah, and I'm not sure when the last time, I guess it would be Vietnam, where you would have probably the majority of the country not wanting, supporting even the efforts. They would say, like, we're not willing to send our men and women to die for the Ukrainians and to prop up that government. And it's not to say that we can't, again, take other measures to support their fight against Russia. That's not good, these wars of aggression. But I would say it's like the Vietnam days. And those days led to
protracted
inflation.
Yes.
and the U.S. standing in the world very low. And the same thing we're seeing our military, which can't get recruits. yeah. you know, can't recruit.
It'll be worse.
It's the same kind of thing. Because who is going to join up right now when your president is using words like nuclear Armageddon?
How difficult is that military? And you follow this, obviously, Colonel Smith. What's the situation on recruitment? Because it is a problem.
Oh, they've missed their recruiting goals this year by tens of thousands. The Army alone missed it by 20,000. People are not willing to sign up, and there are a lot of factors.
Why would they want to sign up? They're going to go down and be sent down to the border to do maid services.
That's going on, plus the military leadership at the Pentagon, they are obsessed with domestic terrorism in the ranks and critical race theory. That's a turnoff to most recruits because they're from the Midwest and the South, and they don't usually buy into a lot of that. They are really, you know, missing their mark because they're not in touch with the troops.
What's the podcast going to be this afternoon? Have you all decided yet?
We'll get to a little bit of everything. There's a lot of things we didn't touch on this. It's pretty controversial stuff going on.
So all right. Secularbrothers.com is a great way to download information on where you can get the podcast. Of course, it's on Rumble as well, Facebook and YouTube. And anywhere you get your podcasts, we encourage you to do that. Again, at secularbrothers.com. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Great way to stay engaged. Also, follow us on all those social media applications, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.